What about the idea that the ages of the gurus are over, and that as meditations come into the Western culture, a democratic culture, that yes, we need meditation mentors, but we don't need these hierarchical gurus that we don't question?
Well, I think there's a basic rightness about that, that the time of the gurus is gone in certain ways. But I don't think that doesn't mean that everything about a guru is therefore unnecessary. Most of these great traditions that we're talking about, whether they're Sufis or Christian contemplative or Zen or Buddhist Tibetan, really came about during the agrarian era, which is really two major technological epochs ago. And the very typical sort of political structure at that time was almost feudalistic. And so in Tibet, for example, a guru wasn't just what we would call, you know, the pastor at the local church or your local rabbi or priest. The guru was often the mayor, the political leader, the educator, the priest, the rabbi, everything rolled into one. And if the guru said jump, you would sort of say how high. I mean, it was just sort of a very, very complex office that a guru was serving. It was entirely appropriate that under those circumstances, you would basically offer every aspect of yourself to the guru. And that was part of a very, very complex training that also had a cultural background that supported it. And it wasn't, under those cultural conditions, it wasn't harmful in a way that we have today would think of it as harmful. Nowadays, though, in democratic, industrial, and post-industrial, egalitarian societies, that is a fish out of water, to put it mildly. And a lot of the turmoil in the first couple of decades that the Eastern traditions came into this country is that the gurus and teachers were coming out of these cultures and traditions where the guru was sort of everything. And then you come over here, and that doesn't play in America. It's like, are you kidding me? It's, you know, we've got this incredibly individualistic, egalitarian culture. At the same time, there are parts of it that are just, there's no going back. There's a kind of democratic, egalitarian attitude is going to mark, you know, this and most future forms of governance. So what you have to do is scale the guru down, so to speak, in an appropriate way. What you don't want to do is throw the baby out with the bathwater. And the problem in this otherwise very necessary scaling down of the guru is that we've shrunk the guru, you know, to really a miniature version of what it's supposed to be. And we want to do that because a real guru or a real teacher threatens our ego. I mean, that's basically the whole essence here. And we're not talking about, in this point, the guru is some sort of domineering figure that tells you everything you're supposed to do. At some point, any form of profound spiritual practice is a real transcendence of self, if you want to find a higher cosmic consciousness other than your mere egoic identity. And under those circumstances, the ego does not go gracefully or willingly. And so if you're just sort of hanging out and you're your own spiritual teacher, you're probably not going to go as far as you can on the path, because you just won't endure the torment, the difficulty, the embarrassment, the profound pain of dying to your own separate self and your own separate identity. And under those circumstances, then you want a spiritual teacher that's going to walk you through that. At some point, there is a profound surrendering that goes on. Again, it's not a dominating or domineering situation, but it's a profound letting go of your own absolute desire to be in charge or be in control. That can happen in a spiritual teacher-student relationship in a very profound way. Obviously, there has to be checks and balances about it. There are certain things that you really can't do in those circumstances, and they're very similar to things that you cannot do if you're a psychoanalyst or a psychotherapist. It's the same kind of relationship, in a sense, and that has to be in place. You're not allowed to have sex with students. You're not allowed to take money in certain ways. You're not allowed to, in any way, make career choices for them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there comes a point when there has to be a profound surrendering of the separate self to that greater awareness and greater consciousness. And if a spiritual teacher is living that to you and transmitting that to you in an authentic way, then that's a very important component. That's not just a bunch of friends walking the path together holding hands. That's somebody who is enlightened and is fundamentally transmitting that enlightenment to you as a demand that you yourself awaken to that estate. So my concern is that in necessarily and appropriately scaling down a guru, that we've scaled them out of existence. And we replace them with basically a kind of feel-good spirituality that lets us all kind of rest in our own egoic self, and nobody challenges us. So we have no rankings, no degrees of better or worse, no higher or lower, no more enlightened or less enlightened. And then we're all equally unenlightened in a certain sense. Nobody's challenged, nobody's threatened, and nobody's awakened. And so that's the sort of downside of what I call boomeritis, which is just kind of a mush egalitarianism that really prevents any form of growth or transcendence or depth of development.